listening to Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian Grand Prix.
In this week's episode, we look back at Mark Webber's superb win in Sunday's Monaco Grand Prix. Channel 10's F1 host Greg Rust joins us to review the last two rounds of the season. And we chat to Australia's 1980 Formula One world champion Alan Jones. There's all that and more on Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian Grand Prix.
Hello and welcome to Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian Grand Prix. Matt Clayton with you for episode 12 of our show, and what a great time for Australia in Formula One after Mark Webber's superb win in Sunday's Monaco Grand Prix. We'll discuss Mark's second career win at the most prestigious F1 race of all a little later on. We'll also chat to Network 10's Formula One host Greg Rust about the latest two races in what's turning into a pretty extraordinary season. Also coming up, Australia's 1980 Formula One world champion Alan Jones will join us from Monaco. And as always, AJ offers some forthright views on the season and the state of play in the sport at the moment. For the time being, though, let's look back at the two races that have been run and won since our last podcast, the Spanish Grand Prix at the Circuit de Catalunya, and of course last weekend's race in Monte Carlo. In Barcelona, round 5, we had our fifth different winner in as many races this year, and what an unlikely winner it was. Pastor Maldonado of Williams took his first career victory, and the first for Williams since Juan Pablo Montoya won the Brazilian Grand Prix at the end of 2004. That's a drought of 130 races for one of the biggest teams in the sport's history. Maldonado was the first Venezuelan to win a Formula One race, and in fact it was his first podium. His previous best finish in Formula One was 8th in China this year, so it was a huge turn-up for Maldonado to win that race. He won it from pole, but he didn't actually earn pole on the Saturday. That went to Lewis Hamilton. However, the McLaren driver was sent to the back of the grid, didn't have enough fuel in his car after qualifying to get back to the pits and therefore provide a fuel sample for the stewards, stopped on track about halfway around. So he was sent to the very back. Maldonado started from pole and won from pole at a circuit where that tends to be the case. He did survive a lot of late race pressure from Fernando Alonso, the hometown hero for Ferrari. Unfortunately for the local fans, had to settle for second. Kimi Raikkonen of Lotus rounded out the podium, a second podium of his comeback year. Hamilton deserves some credit. He did recover from 24th on the grid to 8th, a superb effort where passing is not the easiest. Of the Australians, pretty slim pickings. Mark Webber, 11th after starting 12th. Red Bull really got caught out in qualifying, didn't send Mark out for another lap in Q2, and he got swamped at the end. Daniel Ricciardo, 13th after qualifying 16th for Toro Rosso. So Maldonado's result gave us 5 winners in the first 5 races, something that hadn't happened since 1983. 2 weeks later, we go to Monaco. Mark Webber makes it 6 different winners in as many races in 2012, with his second victory in the Principality in 3 years. It was Mark's 8th career win, and the second time he's actually won a Grand Prix twice. Of course, he won in Brazil in 2009 and also last year, 2011. He led from pole, which again was a pole position that was inherited. Michael Schumacher, the fastest qualifier on Saturday, but he had a 5 grid spot penalty from the Spanish Grand Prix after punting Bruno Senna's Williams there. So Schumacher started from 6th. Great story that it was, and gave Mark the whole shot into the first corner. He led from pole and got to the first corner first, which is not something we can always say about Mark. Controlled the pace and really soaked the pressure up in the final 10 laps to beat Nico Rosberg. And Fernando Alonso rounded out the podium for Ferrari. In the end, the top three separated by less than a second after 78 laps, which was pretty remarkable given there were no late race safety cars to bunch the field up. Further back, McLaren, a real day to forget for them. Hamilton 5th after qualifying 3rd. Dreadful start, plenty of dramas, not too happy with his team over the radio. And, that was better than Jenson Button. He started 13th, didn't finish after being stuck behind the caterham of Heikki Kovalainen for basically the whole race. Even worse for Pastor Maldonado and Williams. Two weeks after being on pole and winning in Spain, he had 2 penalties, a gearbox penalty. He chopped up Sergio Perez's Sauber in practice, started last and was out on lap 1. So real hero to zero stuff for Maldonado. Speaking of DNFs, Daniel Ricciardo had his first DNF of the year with steering issues late when he was running outside the points for Toro Rosso. So after 6 races with 6 different winners, first time it's ever happened in Formula One history, the points look a little bit like this. Fernando Alonso leading the Drivers' Championship remarkably for Ferrari on 76 points. Sebastian Vettel, 73, is second. Mark Webber, also 73, is third. Vettel ahead courtesy of 2 podiums to Webber's 1. Lewis Hamilton, 63 points, still hasn't won this year despite being on pole several times. Nico Rosberg for Mercedes rounds out the top 5, 59 points. In the Constructors' Championship, Red Bull leads with 146 points, McLaren has 108, and Ferrari and Lotus each have 86 points.
Don't forget to like the Australian Grand Prix on Facebook for behind-the-scenes news, updates and exclusive opportunities.
This is Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian GP.
So that's where we stand after six races this season. And joining me to discuss the stories behind the results is Network 10's Formula One host and a bloke who could probably use some sleep after a big weekend of motorsport for Australians, Greg Rust. Rusty, welcome.
Thank you for having me on. The lack of sleep's part of the job, and it's a good job, so I'm very lucky.
Well, it's nice to have a lack of sleep when you get results like last night. So why don't we start there? Mark Webber's second career win at Monaco, superbly judged and really absorbed that late race pressure beautifully in the final laps. What did you make of his performance?
You know, because you've seen the record books and you know some of the great names that have won in Monaco. I mean, 70th anniversary of the race, to become a two-time winner, to join a very exclusive club is something very special in the career of Mark Webber. His dad, Alan Rangus, no sooner had the podium wrapped up and Alan was on the phone to say just how proud and pleased they were. He said to me, it's the most nervous he's ever been in any of Mark's Formula One races because there were so many things going on towards the end of the race, those sprinkles of rain, the fact that the pack had closed in on him with Nico Rosberg, Fernando Alonso, and even his own teammate in Sebastian Vettel, and it was a nail-biting finish. But Mark, from start to finish, you would have to say, more or less did it in the manner that Sir Jack Brabham, the 1959 winner, always, you know, told, you know, drivers to do, and that is to win the race in the slowest possible time or with the slowest possible speed, and Mark absolutely executed it superbly.
That was the thing I was thinking of. Mark's obviously a huge fan of Sir Jack, and so is Alan, and you know, that quote was running through my head last night, and I certainly hoped he had it under control in those last few laps because he certainly let the pack draw up to him. Speaking of Mark, he's now just 3 points off the championship lead held by Fernando Alonso. It's pretty remarkable, really, that Alonso's leading the title race, given what it is that he's driving. He just continues to impress. He might be better than ever, I think, this year.
I mean, everyone that I deal with would completely agree with you. I mean, he has this knack of dragging something out of the car, even when it doesn't seem to be, you know, on the same par, if you like, with rival cars. He's just got that real knack. Clearly, Ferrari have taken a step forward. Felipe Massa's obviously risen to the pressure of the occasion as well. I think we saw a bit of that on the weekend, but Alonso's driving is superb. And I mean, there are a lot of stories to come out of the weekend. You know, Michael Schumacher, I think, despite the penalty kicking in after the incident in Barcelona with Bruno Senna, the fact that that car was the fastest in qualifying, I think, is a huge story for Formula One as well.
So much of this year, Rusty, it looks like getting on top of Pirelli's tyres is the real issue. Cars look like they can be flying one week, they can be nowhere the next. Now, you're a purist, but you're also someone who understands the need for entertainment. What's your take on the tyres this year? Do you think they might be having too much of a determining factor in the races?
That's really hard. Your question almost suggests that I need to wear two different caps because a general sports fan, I think the feedback we're getting from that side of the audience is, wow, how good is this year, the unpredictability, the variety of winners, etc., etc. But the purist in me says, and I kind of, I guess this is where you were leading, that, you know, it would be fantastic to have three, maybe four guys or two or three different constructors going at it wheel to wheel, week in, week out, and maybe a little of that unpredictability dialed out of it. It's interesting to see that you know, significant figures in the sport, from drivers to engineers, are scratching their heads a little bit in terms of understanding the behaviour of the tyres and how to get the best out of them. They will unlock that. It may not happen for a couple of rounds, but they will unlock it, that's for sure. I'm not a believer in luck. I certainly wouldn't look at a result like Pastor Maldonado's at the last round in Spain and say that was pure luck. I don't believe that. Yeah, I mean, the purist in me would like to see, and I think that'll be the beauty of this championship. We'll get to a point, we're only six rounds in, and it's a 20-round championship. We need to kind of pause and remember that. And as we go, I think you'll start to see a bit more of a form guide emerge, but we just haven't got that yet. And normally by this stage of the championship, I mean, if you look at 2011, Sebastian Vettel was bolting at this point, wasn't he? And it's very different in 2012.
Well, this is almost going back to 2010 and probably with a couple more players. You think the Lotus and Kimi Raikkonen, you would imagine, will stand on the top step at some point this year. And Lewis Hamilton, you know, he's had such great pace in qualifying, yet hasn't been able to unlock a win in that car. To my mind, I think McLaren still looks like the fastest car. I said that after first practice in Australia, and they haven't really done much to prove me right at this point. But what is going on there? They've had a lot of problems, haven't they, with pit stop problems, and they had the issue with Hamilton in Spain, and, you know, Button with a couple of ragged races the last two. Do you think they're sort of underperforming a little bit at the moment?
Some of the faux pas that you're talking about, which are incredibly rare for a race team like McLaren, do surprise. There's no doubt about that. They'll get on top of it. That's the kind of organisation that they are. I still think they've got a very good car, and I wouldn't mind betting you'll see one of those silver machines win the next race in Montreal. You talked at the beginning of your question there about Lewis. He's due for a win. You know, he had those string of third place finishes to start the year. You know, his number is going to come up, that's for sure. It's almost like it's his turn is going to come for a win, I think. They'll get on top of it. They like Montreal, obviously. That's the next round of the championship. Who knows? It could be as soon as that. So, yeah, I mean, the thing for them, I guess, is why. Why are these simple things happening? But you, at the end of the day, have got to remember that, you know, you're talking about pit stops in the order of 2 to 3 seconds. It is, when you step back for a second and realise that, yes, it's their day-in, day-out business, but in 2 to 3 seconds, what they achieve and, you know, how we don't see more things like that or more issues emerge from pit stops is incredible. Just shows how good the guys really are.
And saying all of that, Lewis Hamilton's 13 points off the championship lead, so he's absolutely right in the middle of this fight, isn't he?
Yeah, he is, and he'll give it a real good shake. He's already saying that, you know, he's not, just because he hasn't had a win, he's absolutely not giving up. And at the same time, we are going to have another story start to tick along here. Monaco typically is the place where driver negotiations for next year and rumours about who may be heading where start to emerge. And already there's talk about a big-dollar contract being offered by McLaren to re-sign Lewis Hamilton so that he stays with that outfit. Some people are saying, well, really, where would he go? You know, it's the obvious choice for him. But, you know, anything can and could happen in Formula One, so time will tell there.
Just to finish off, Rusty, you mentioned Montreal before. It's probably the race of all of them that has the most similarities to Melbourne. It's a semi-permanent street circuit in a public park. It always seems to throw up a pretty good race. The city really gets behind it. For you, though, that's a 3 a.m. start on a Saturday and a Sunday. So what's the Greg Rust strategy? Are you sort of on the two-coffee strategy, or what's the plan for that weekend?
We do have a good team behind the scenes, and, yes, things like that happen. You know, you're getting a coffee on the way into the office, and you try and break the sleep routine a little bit so that you're as fresh as you possibly can be, but that goes with the turf, and I'm lucky to be doing it, that's for sure.
Well, I do remember last year. I think it was the same night as the Silverstone round of MotoGP, and I think the Canadian Grand Prix started in the dark. Our time and finished in daylight, so it was a bit of a marathon one, wasn't it?
Those things, the double headers are probably the toughest to deal with, and they happen from time to time. But we're working on a solution for one of the double headers at the moment, and some suggestion that we may be joined by the 1980 Formula One World Champion Alan Jones, but I'll keep you posted on that one. So that's not for Canada, but for one of the coming races in June, and that Darrell will do MotoGP with one of my colleagues, Mark Howard. So that could be a way that we alleviate that particular doubleheader, and it would be cool to have AJ with us, but we'll just wait and see yet.
Well, we're going to be speaking to AJ a little bit later on in tonight's podcast as well, so I'm sure he'll be as typically forthright as always. Rusty, look, thanks very much for joining us. Really appreciate your input, and hopefully we can talk to you on Keeping Track a little bit later in the season.
Thanks for having me on. Love to, and what a season we're having. It's only going to get better, I think.
Don't forget, you can follow the Australian Grand Prix on Twitter at AusGrandPrix.
This is Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian GP.
Mark Webber's win at Monaco pitched the Red Bull driver right back into the thick of the title fight, as he hopes to become just the third Australian to claim the ultimate prize in motorsport. One of the two Australians who knows exactly how that feels is Alan Jones, the 1980 world champion for Williams. AJ was at Monaco last weekend, and we tracked him down after Webber's win. Alan, thanks very much for joining us, and terrific timing too with Mark Webber's second win at Monaco in the last 3 years. What was the atmosphere like at Monaco over the weekend, and give us your thoughts about Mark's performance?
Well, I mean, the atmosphere at Monaco is always extremely good. You know, if nothing else, it's the most prestigious Grand Prix of the season, and you know, it's probably the most watched Grand Prix of the season, and it's a wonderful atmosphere. And of course, for Mark to have qualified as well as he did, and then hang on towards the end under an enormous amount of pressure, it was a great drive.
And of course, Alan, a subject very close to your heart, Williams. Obviously, the race before Monaco, we had Pastor Maldonado winning for the team where you had so much success. It's hard to believe this is a team that the second last race of last year, they were on the back row of the grid. It must give you a great thrill to see them back up the front again. And do you think this is something we can see from them going forward for the rest of the season?
Yeah, I can. I mean, I said at the beginning of the season that now they're with Renault, they've got the power unit that they want, and you know, they're responding extremely well. They've got two reasonably inexperienced young drivers. You know, Frank wasn't particularly happy after the practice on Saturday. I think they made a few little errors of judgment in that in terms of their strategy. But, you know, they came back, and I think Maldonado, you know, ended up by qualifying about eighth or something, which is pretty good.
Just wanted to go back to Mark for a second, Alan. There's been a lot of chat about where Mark might end up next year. I mean, I guess this happens when you sign rolling one-year contracts. It must be May, so we're talking about where Mark might be for 2013. The Ferrari thing has cropped up again, as I'm sure you're aware. There would have been a bit of talk about that at Monaco, and particularly in the light of Massa struggling so much this year. If Mark has a chance to go there, given their pedigree and the history in that team and what it could do for his profile, do you think he might have a look at that?
I'm sure he'd have a look at it. Pedigree counts for little in Formula One, and I think that Williams is testament to that. You know, you're only as good as your last race. You're only as good as how your cars are going now. Personally, I would think that, you know, Mark is with a good team. The devil you know is better than the devil you don't know. Having said that, if he signed on with Red Bull for next year, he's probably still going to have Vettel as his teammate, you know, which is a pretty hard taskmaster. If he goes to Ferrari, it might be a breath of fresh air. It's very prestigious. It's something really good to have on your CV. He gets on extremely well with Alonso, so maybe that could be a good way for him to go.
Well, it's probably one way he could up his after-dinner speaking fee, I would have thought, once he retires.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, I mean, he's already done one of the two things that most Formula One drivers would like to do, and that's win Monaco, and I think the other one is to drive for Ferrari.
Well, he's ticked one box, so maybe there's another one to be ticked. Alan, while we've got you, there's been a lot of talk about Mark, obviously, in the last few days here because of Monaco. We shouldn't forget the other Australian on the grid in Daniel Ricciardo. What's your take on how he's performing in his first full season with Toro Rosso? Because obviously the machinery is only capable of so much. How do you think he's going?
I think he's going extremely well. He's had a bit of bad luck. There's no doubt about that. You know, there is this old saying that you make your own luck. But, you know, I think Daniel has had a bit of bad luck. But I think overall, he's impressing the people that he's driving for. And that's the main thing.
And Alan, before we do let you go, just wanted to touch on you really and your role. You've done this FIA guest steward role for a couple of Grand Prix now over the last couple of seasons. Plans for that to continue again in 2012? And what sort of extra perspective does that give you after being around the paddock for so many years to be on the inside, if you like, watching the races unfold?
Well, yeah, I mean, as I said to somebody the other day, I'm more used to being dragged up in front of them rather than being one. but no, I am doing I'm doing India this year, and maybe one other, but definitely India. And I look forward to it. The technology that has given put at our fingertips now to make these decisions is just unbelievable. And I keep saying to the FIA, they should do a small sort of a program of, you know, the sort of equipment and technology that the stewards have got at hand. It's fascinating.
How do you think you would have fared with that amount of scrutiny and technology back in your day?
I would have been in more trouble than Speed Gordon.
Very good answer. Alan, look, thanks so much for joining us after Monaco. Terrific to talk to you, and hopefully we can have a chat down the track on the podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, anytime. Thank you, bye.
That's all we have time for in this edition of Keeping Track. Don't forget to like the Australian Grand Prix on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at AusGrandPrix, or go to GrandPrix.com.au, where you'll find details of which big-name international guests are coming up on an upcoming episode. Thanks to our guests Greg Rust and Alan Jones, and thanks to you for listening, and join us again on Keeping Track soon.